This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Man, I love that intro. Educated educators talking education. And how about the new civic media? Enjoy. I love that. Just plain old Busted Pencils. Enjoy. That's what we want you to do here every Tuesday night. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. It's where educated educators get together to talk education. It's Johnny Lupinacci, Tim Slecker, and in the studio, Evan Preston there, making sure that all the magic continues. Oh, you know, part two of data, but Johnny, talking about data, you know, today, one of those days, you know, as a leader, I had to spend a lot of time with a web presentation of the things that I should be concerned about, you know, and the data that I need to collect to demonstrate to the world or anybody's looking that quality teacher education is something that my institution really believes in. And I got to tell you, I do believe in the mission of absolute quality preparation for teachers. I am concerned about the data sets that we use to demonstrate quality. Do we have a discussion point? Because last week, right? I mean, and there's still more, but last week we kind of dug into the look, okay, reading and math scores dropped for the first time in 20 years. Over the last 2 years, that's a pandemic related, you know, learning loss. We had a lot of great people, a lot of comments, and everybody, thanks for sending in all your comments after the show from last week. But a lot of people just going like, wow, I didn't realize how deep the discussion around data, what data means, what does a test score drop indicate? Does it indicate learning loss? So when we're gathering data, so I spent most of today talking about and listening to, you know, what are the types of data? What is the type of evidence that you would want to put forth to declare that you have a quality teacher education program, right? So I think to start there, that's not a bad position to say, what is evidence that would genuinely communicate to people outside looking in that you're doing something good, right? So what is the evidence? I don't, you know, and data. Well, people say, do you have good data? Question though is what is the data? What kind of data? And are there limitations to quote data or evidence? Does some evidence tell us things that we hope we want to know? Are there times when the data or the evidence doesn't really tell us what people are telling us its meaning? So Johnny, all this confusion, I just, you know, spending a whole day discussing the myriad number of ways of I can present evidence to show quality, it made me think about going, how do we talk more about data? So Johnny, tell me about your experience with evidence. You're probably like a straight test type of numbers dude.
No, man, I love numbers as much as the next math teacher, but you know, I like this discussion, Tim, because we're at a moment where we're asking real hard questions about what does the data tell us, right? And every time you say data, man, I think of that Star Trek guy.
Oh man.
And so
Lieutenant
Commander Data. What does Lieutenant Commander Data tell us about whatever the decision is that we need to make as school leaders or as school communities? And so, you know, what I think you alluded to that's important to highlight here is that all measures, so all the data we get, illuminates certain things and hides other things. And so as decision makers, one of the best things we can do is find valid and reliable sources of data, right? And pull them together and have the skill set to discern the data, to digest it, to have a conversation with Lieutenant Commander Data about what are the things happening for our learners and our learning community.
Right.
And together in that, what are the priorities of our learners and learning community? And we have to make hard decisions based on as much data discernment. See, I would see the double D.
Data double discernment. D.
Okay. Data discernment, not just data, not just big data, not just a conversation with Lieutenant Commander data, but bring it all together, valid and reliable sources of data, and have data discernment as leaders and school community leaders. This is really important because we ask, what is the information in front of us? What are our priorities and how do we make the best data-informed decision? I love data-informed decision. I don't like dogmatically following numbers. And I'm a math guy, man. I love me some numbers. But I know they illuminate particular things and they hide other things. So the CAPE folks, the NAEP folks, all the acronyms, let them eat data.
Right.
And let's get down to asking questions about what the information is telling us, what are our priorities, and how do we discern the data as we make decisions. That's the triple D.
That's the triple D.
Data decisions.
You know, that makes me think about, you know, the show last week. In fact, he said, you know, the data from the NAEP results, 9-year-olds between 2020 and 2022, their test scores in reading comprehension or some type of, you know, and math dropped, okay, over those 2 years. And what did that really mean, right? Okay, students, as we said, wow, well, during a global pandemic, during chaotic social uprisings, during all of this disaster, kids being in school, sometimes being remote, some kids who were in rural areas without the ability to get access, didn't have sporadic remote teaching even available. So during that 24-month period, churn was kind of the word we could say was this was what you could count on. If there was anything you could count on, it was churn.
And Tim, I want to back up for our listeners. Just pause for a second. If you didn't catch last week's show and we're talking about this test data that Tim's talking about here, we use the acronym NAEP. That's sort of like professional lingo. It's the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It comes from the National Center of Education Statistics. It's valid. It's reliable. It's a wonderful measure of where children are at in reading and in mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
These are two separate tests they take, and they get a measurement back, and we get a number. It does tell us fairly well some important information or data that also can be disaggregated. So we can break it up into groups, see which particular groups are receiving quality instruction and doing well. And so we do get some good information from this.
Yeah. I don't know if I was coming down on the bad information side. I know that's typically my mantra, you know, everything's horrible in Tim's world. But I wasn't really going there. I mean,
I just wanted to clarify.
But yeah, I appreciate the clarification again, the NAEP data, but the hysterics that, okay. So that data, when you say data discernment, so a large group of influential people took that data a couple weeks ago and said it meant,
it meant
a disaster. It meant learning loss. It meant bad teaching occurred during the pandemic. It meant nothing good. Right. And I actually, a listener sent me a note saying, you know, it was really funny when you made that comment about the fact, and I said, you know, the way they positioned that score drop was by talking about the 20 years of progress that was made up until that point. And I said, man, during those 20 years, I don't remember being invited to the progress party. In fact, you know, for the last 20 some years, it's pretty much been public education, teachers, anything around this, any data that's been put forward publicly has been in some way being able to say how bad things were. So I found it very interesting that they used the data discernment to make things sound really bad during a 20-year time of progress, of which I was like, wait a minute, I missed that party. So anyway, data discernment, right? Johnny, go ahead.
Yeah, during a moment of change. I mean, I was talking to my buddy the other day. We both like to talk about cars a lot. I mean, from Motor City, we love the cars and we were talking about it, and it reminded me of the same conversation, Tim. We were talking about the shift and the change from the kind of petroleum engines that we have, gas engines, to electric. We're talking about Tesla and all the different e-cars that are coming out and different things. And we are talking about there's a sea change in transportation that's occurring due to a variety of factors.
Mm-hmm.
One could say the same thing in this test score comparison is saying, well, after years and years of progress with the gas engine, now we have seen, things take a dive because something different and something maybe better for society or better for transportation is replacing it. That's the moment I think we're in, Tim, with education.
Oh,
we're going to see scores dropping on old measures because we were historically doing things and looking at things that no longer are relevant or matter in the same priority scale in what education is. And so that's, I think we're in a moment where we're hoping for data to match and show progress, but things are different out there. The map is no longer fit for the territory.
Oh, man. All these situational types of descriptions, you're making me think, I got pictures in my mind. Anybody else out there, if you got a picture, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Do some data discernment with Johnny and Tim. Be an educated educator who talks education. Because, there are times, but it's just you put this out there. But you know what, Johnny, you pivoted into this place of going, okay, are we, quote, at a moment, and I'm actually going to talk about the fact that I think we are in a moment. And there was actually a really great piece in The New Yorker that talked to us a little bit about this, But when we get back, though, too. And oh, hey, everybody out there listening, WXCO, Bull Falls Radio, WFHR. Homegrown Radio, WTTN Devil Radio, and WAUK The Shaw. Thanks for listening to Busted Pencils.
Give us a
call.
We'll
get all of you back right when we come back from our break. Busted Pencils, fully leaded. Jump in when you hear music like that. My goodness, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. The number's 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Educated educators talking education. And again, we just want to welcome WXCO Bull Falls Radio, WFHR Homegrown Radio, of course, WTTN, you're always there, Devil Radio, and WAUK The Shaw. Oh, man. We're going everywhere, Johnny. Busted Pencils, fully led at education. So we're talking about data, how to discern data. We talked about last week the fact that everybody was in an uproar about a decline in reading and math scores of nine-year-olds. And a new piece out in The New Yorker titled Measuring the Pandemic's Devastating Effect on School Children. All right, so I saw this article. Now, this is by Isaac Chatner. And I was like, okay, let me dig into this because here's going to be another one of these. Oh my God, the world is collapsing because test scores fell. Now, the author interviewed Susanna Loeb, the director of the Annenberg Institute for School Reform at Brown University, and she's an education expert policy researcher. And, the interview just goes back and forth, Johnny asking some questions. What do the NAEP scores mean? Can we really identify the pandemic as the cause of these things? And it was a really good informed discussion. There was a little bit more focus on the test score drop than I would have liked, but there got to a point where there was a pivot. And you talked about this in the first beginning of going, are we in a moment where we might want to talk about things differently, where we might do things differently? And I'm going to just read quote from the article. Okay, the question from the interview, but is this serious enough? In other words, all of the drastic changes that occurred during the pandemic, the interview was talking about, are the drops, okay, test score drops, so huge that it actually calls for a new policy response going forward? Because the problems from the pandemic appear so massive. Okay, nice question by the interviewer. Response: I actually think some of the test scores are going to go back up pretty quickly. Some of the students who appeared to have lost a lot during the pandemic will learn more quickly, be able to catch up, and have a really successful educational trajectories. My main worry is that there is a meaningful chunk of students who lost not only in terms of their test scores, but also lost their interest in school, their identities as students, and their sense that they can be successful. Those students will disengage further, drop out of school, and not develop the kinds of skills and capacities that they need to really contribute to their communities and be successful economically and socially. That's the biggest worry. It's not, oh, here's a student who lost 5 points. That's going to be a problem, but we're going to have a bigger group of students who are going to disengage from school. And Johnny, here she comes. There's this moment of opportunity now, not only to help support these students who have not learned as much as they should have or have disengaged in school, but to address some of the parts of schooling that we weren't doing well before. John, I mean, this is obviously a busted pencil listener here, because I think we've been saying this for what, 3.5 years now, that, man, when we do have this moment, are we going to pivot and recognize all of the shortcomings, possibly even admit that a test score drop during a global pandemic is to be expected? However, to watch the disengagement, to see those students that weren't being met with the system the way it was, the fact that they are now even more vulnerable than they were pre-pandemic. It's like, do we take this moment, pivot, shift, and say, of course, we're going to see some test scores drop. We're going to see some gains in the future. However, as the policy research person said, actually, most of these test scores are probably just going to go up on their own by the fact that kids are going to go back to school and they're going to all of a sudden have learning gains. The reality, though, of saying, what are the lasting effects of teaching and learning during the churn of the pandemic? We're really worried about the qualitative effects. This is where this piece makes progress and kind of pushes forward. Johnny.
Yeah, man, I love it. And I like that whole push. I imagine we have back to football, it's fall. I imagine that whole O-line push, right? When the whole O-line, offensive line, for listeners who aren't football, that's all the big fellas on the line. When they push, right, then it's easier for us smaller guys behind them to get yardage by just running that way. And so I love when people writing in places like the New Yorker or other media outlets that draw on good, sound information, discern the data they have, and communicate a message that pushes, that helps us behind them gain yardage. And what I mean by that is educators and teachers who are doing that work, who are saying, yes, we in every way know that there are children who didn't get as much instruction as they typically would, or who during a pandemic were disconnected from education, but they didn't stop learning. They didn't stop growing, right? And so let's bring them together. Let's figure out where they're at, and let's get some support behind that push. For our football fans like myself, that's the ball snapped and the line moved, right? And we went forward. And so I appreciate you sharing that article. I appreciate that article being out there, because there's a push. But where there's a push,
uh-huh.
Oh boy.
Okay.
The possible flag that gets thrown or something that happens. So take us there, because I read
well,
this.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm going to say. I got to say, you know, and we're coming up 844-967-2789 if you want to jump in. But Johnny, here we go. Last part of that paragraph. In my own read of the research, I think that what's really important for students is to have an adult in school who knows them well, who knows their academic and social needs, and can really help them to learn and can celebrate successes with them and help them get on the right path. Oh my God, opportunity to say teacher, but no adult. When we get back, what's the difference between adults and teachers? Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, 844-967-2789. Call us when we get back, right after the break. Dancing Johnny Lupinacci, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. The number's 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Data discernment, Lieutenant Commander Data, Star Trek The Next Generation. What does the data tell us? When 9-year-olds' test scores drop during a pandemic, what does it mean? Oh, all kinds of things. We were talking about a new article that came out in the New Yorker. I just got to scroll up to make sure that I get everything right. Measuring the pandemic's devastating effect on school children. The article by Isaac Chatner, and it was an interview that he conducted with Susanna Loeb, the director of the Annenberg Institute for School Reform at Brown University. She is an education policy expert researcher. And Johnny, she gave us this nice opening to say, okay, test scores maybe aren't the biggest concern. I'll requote what she said. I actually think some of the test scores are going to go back up pretty quickly. Okay. So in other words, hey, take away the churn, take away the pandemic, the effect, put kids back in school, and boy, they're going to regain a lot of things pretty darn quickly. Right. And
I agree with that.
I don't disagree with that. This is why I'm like, this is good, reasonable stuff. This is data discernment. This is helping people understand. It's like test score drops are an indicator that something went on. And the potential, though, of going, you know, do we need to move heaven and earth to bring reading and math achievement scores up? Or do we need to move heaven and earth to recognize that we have a moment? Because Johnny, you use that word, a moment right now, to kind of pivot and look at and say, my goodness, there are lots of things. In fact, during the pandemic, disengagement of students, those kids who were left behind before the pandemic, my goodness, we weren't working towards meeting their needs. We can do that now. This data is a wake-up call to say, man, let's look at the other qualitative data about maybe what, quote, really matters: kids' well-being, their sense of belonging, their belief in their ability to be successful, right? What are the, there aren't standardized test measurements for those types of, you know, decisions and ways that we're thinking. So we want to dig deep and we need to ask better questions and we need to get better data. But in this, so I kind of get the wah, wah, wah. When, while mixed in with that good solution, though, I don't hear the need for incredibly awesome, high-quality educators, teachers. In other words, I don't hear teachers. Now, maybe they meant to say teachers, but, you know, I'm first thrown off by the word, we need to have an adult in school, okay? And I don't disagree with the fact that, too, this idea that these are people who could be from the community and how they might help them recognize what's really important in the communities. But, man, when you move into, though, and think about this, here, I'll quote from the article again, quote, we may want to rethink some of the ways we staff schools so that we can diversify the kinds of, okay, now she uses the right word, educators in our school systems. Some of them could be highly trained and skilled in running a large classroom, while others can work more individually with students. We want to pull people who have experience in the community and share experiences with students into schools so that the students have role models. I don't, like, again, I'm not
like all this. Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. But I want, and I know the Busted Pencils listeners want, I know educators through Talk Education want to hear, darn it, we need high quality teachers who have agency to look at those kids in front of them, not as data sets, but as human beings with these unique contributions that they're going to provide to the world. And that as a wonderfully awesome, well-educated, prepared teacher, teachers with agency and passion, man, how did they miss that, Johnny?
Well, I don't know, Tim, because I think we're reading this and I know you're going somewhere with this, because for our listeners, there's more to this article. So it starts to unfold more. But if I just back out and I pretend like I didn't read the whole thing, Tim, I love all of these things.
I know.
So I'm a highly qualified teacher with all kinds of agency and voice. And still, when you put me in a middle school classroom with 52, 13-year-olds, I'm not highly effective. And the times I have been incredibly effective in those situations, I had amazing co-teachers, parapros at different levels. I knew the curriculum. I was expert on what kind of pre-algebra or algebra lessons we needed, where it needed to go. And I had curated and worked within the community to have amazing people who were, they were called parapros at the time. My pathway into teaching was being a parapro. And so they were other adults. And what we know, this is the not rocket science about education that we've gotten wrong in schools, is if you put a whole bunch of people the same age together in a room, no matter what age it is, even if you were to take a whole bunch of 35-year-olds and put them in a room, no company does this for productivity and effectiveness. So we do it in schools, and then we put one person who is oftentimes maybe even only a few years older than them in a room with them and expect high results. So I love this idea of bringing in diverse educators, intergenerational.
Okay.
The most effective high school classroom I had, we had an elderly care facility nearby, and we opened up doors both ways. And we said, hey, if folks would like to come hang out in our classroom during when we're doing our reading lessons and our different times. So we had intergenerational learning. Behavior incidents came down. Okay. Integration with the community was at an all-time high. And these are beautiful things that community schools are rooted in. So she's just describing to me effective community schools. Now, our current structure doesn't value that labor the way it ought to be valued to sustain it. In other words, parapros don't often make as much or enough money to sustain being an excellent parapro. So I think, Tim, what you're saying too is having highly qualified people building around surrounding children as they're learning. I'm all for that. But I love what you're saying so far. So I'm still on board.
And I know, like, I'm on board, but it's just a caution. And like you said, over the, as I said, the 20 years of quote success that I didn't witness, at least the, I wasn't invited to that party until last week when they said we had 20 years of progress. I was like, whoa. But now here we are in a moment, and I'm like, I'm kind of liking the data discernment. I'm liking the fact that, okay, here's what NAEP can tell us. Here's what reading and math scores of 9-year-olds might mean, whether they, go up and down. However, the reality is that these scores actually illuminate something even more important, which is the child, the engagement of a child, whether or not they're going to be a contributing member of society. It's like, this really, when you say why do we believe in and support public education for a well-rounded contributing human being that's going to do wonderful things for the world, we start to realize that sometimes math and reading scores aren't necessarily a great gauge as to whether that's happening. And in fact, we might have other gauges that say that's not happening. And there was just it was too light of a dance with talking about adults and quote educators. I wanted to hear from this piece the need for really, really awesome teachers. Now, maybe they meant that, but I get concerned about people taking opportunities, moments in time, you know, taking that time, like that disaster capitalism kind of thing, and go, here's where we're going to pivot a new pathway in. And this new pathway, hey, we don't really need licensed teachers. We need adults who can be educators, who can take curriculum, you know, maybe they can put it forward. And I start worrying about personalized learning to the computer. I go back to our guest, Alfie Cohn, for the longest time. I'm concerned when we're not explicitly talking about making, as you said, Johnny, the idea of 52 kids to one teacher, the reality that we're going, that was a disaster before the pandemic, and it better be a disaster going forward. I get really concerned and confused that we're not going to go there. And so when I don't hear the explicitness of talking about quality educators, teachers particularly, I'm just concerned that here again, the moment might be exploited for another for a reason that might actually continue the demoralization of teachers. That's where I'm coming from. I'm concerned about the fact that this moment in time, for me, a passionate educator, talking education, who likes education and loves teachers, this moment to restore teacher agency, to bring this moment and say how important they are, that if we don't take this moment, and I'm going to tell you, I want to use this opportunity for this gain, take this moment and bring back, restore respect to teachers, give them the agency to do those wonderful things that we know before the pandemic, the system wasn't allowing those teachers to do. Let's do more. That's where I'm, you know, so I'm not totally beating down on this article typically like I will sometimes. I think this is a great article that helps us understand there's a sensitivity towards qualitative, quantitative data in the ways we look at it. I'm just concerned about the conclusions. I love how they set it up and say, man, now is a moment, but I'm not sure they gave me enough prescription for the new moment.
Tim, I'll tell you, and this is where we went out from each other, and we're going to come back together, because I knew where the article went and you did too. And those of us in education have heard this time and time again. We're like, yes, I'm with you. And we need more help. We need to change things. We need to diversify the modes and means in which young people are engaged in your classroom. I'm like, yes, you're getting me excited here. And then they wheel in a cart of laptops.
Exactly, right?
And what are these laptops going to do for these kids right now? Now, sometimes, I mean, great, technology is a tool that can do wonderful things. It's not going to solve the problem, because now I have, you know, 52 kids, 52 laptops, and one teacher. I've got to charge these laptops. I got to make sure they're all right. I got to make sure they're logged in. This is disaster. But what it was is, all that buildup, all of that, yes, I'm here for it. Yes, that sounds great. All of that was to sell something.
Yeah.
And that's what you were talking about, Tim, with that disaster capitalism idea. All that was to build up to, we need a solution. And it's like a really good infomercial.
Johnny, but you know what, though? We don't have a call, but Dan on the website just got this text in there, though, kind of comes in.
Yeah.
Dan, so I'll just read it. Dan says, abso-effin-lute. Correct about the qualitative impact. We have ignored substance for too long, and in my state, we're playing catch up with the hurt by sprinkling a little SEL into the curriculum as if polishing fire extinguisher strategies will suffice when the heart and soul first should be the approach. Meanwhile, all computer-based testing is the coming mandate, sucking the humanity out of a human endeavor. So Dan, thank you for that comment. You kind of like, that's my concern, Johnny. That's where you were going. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to give Dan some cred there.
It's just like, and for our listeners who are educators, you know this, you're like, yes, yes, yes. And they say, and I'm going to date myself and say, and here's a BlackBerry for every teacher in the classroom. What is this BlackBerry going to do for me?
Right.
You can take attendance on it now. Okay, great. This is not helpful. What we build up is, it's like a really great infomercial. All of the information, you absolutely need something to help you with this phenomena. Children deserve better education. Here's all the information that shows us that they deserve that and that we can do better. And now for, you know, one time only, buy this and have this product in your school. And I got closets full of that stuff, man. Closets full of it. It's a technology graveyard in most schools.
It's a technology graveyard. And you say it's taking this opportunity to actually do something great. And in fact, possibly letting a market-based system or a market solution, quote, some form of a curricular thing, something we can buy, something that comes in a box, something that's prepackaged, something that actually continues to dehumanize teachers. Man, number's 844-967-2789. It is Busted Pencils. It's more Fully Leaded Education Talk when we get back after the break. Oh, there it is. The Violence, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. 844-967-2789. Man, we started off with rehashing the NAEP scores back into what does data tell us. The moment that we can actually say that, wow, the humanity is what matters. And are we going to take this moment? But Joanne from Madison is calling. Joanne, your contribution to this conversation, or first of all, are you an educated educator who likes to talk education?
I am an educator. I plead guilty. And one of the
good. So, Jan, what's up?
One of the things I plead guilty to is liking online education. I've liked it even more in the last couple of years, where I've been given some leeway for experimentation, and I'm scared about how it's been trashed. And not given a fair shake, even though I've seen amazing exemplars of how online education can work wonders in many circumstances, especially with individuals with disabilities, special circumstances. We get into another pandemic and all of that. So could I ask, what can we do to make sure online education, again, with the input of teachers, with the soul of teachers in those systems, how can those exemplars be evaluated fairly, not treated just like the jokes that they've been treated as?
Right, Joanne. We've talked about the fact that you bring up a great point, and we've talked about this going. It's like it's not a one size fits all with anything. In fact, during the pandemic, we did learn how technology can really help serve groups of students, how teachers can be empowered to keep teaching in different ways. This is not a rant. And if it comes off as an anti-technology, anti-online rant, that's not where it is. And I appreciate that. Johnny, what do you want to add to that?
We came up on the break and I was thinking the same thing. And I'm glad Joanne called, because she shared the important piece with the input of educators there were educators before who knew the potential and the promise and the effectiveness for certain learners with online education. Mm-hmm. We all learned more about it during the pandemic in a crash course. What we need is those leaders in online education. And Joanne highlighted that. She said, with the input of experienced educators who are familiar with the kind of pedagogy that is conducive to teaching online, you could do amazing things. It is very different, but akin to teaching in the classroom. And so I'm all for it. And that does utilize and require technology. So mm-hmm. where we were going earlier was sort of that rant on, don't give us useless technology and universal curriculums or one size fits all silver bullets. Engage in this learning moment where we learned there are tools that we can put to work and we have excellent teachers who carried us and continue to teach us how to implement these ways for diverse students to gain access to quality education. I think it's a huge moment. And I agree with our author that we were talking about. The test scores will come up because more children will be learning than ever coming out of this era.
Joanne, how does that work for you?
really good. My students have a funny name for those courses that are misused in terms of online education. They call them set it and forget it courses. They've been given courses like machines, and they get told go in the corner and do your class, and the teacher comes in at the very end and gives a grade, and that's horrible. I mean, that's absolutely horrible. And when I think of online education, I think of fantasy football, for example, where everybody's in it all the time and the excitement is so high and people are working on it all the time. And that's what I see in some of the classes, the really great exemplars I've been talking about of online education, where it just becomes a part of students' life force, that they're looking around the world and saying, how does this relate to the class I'm taking right now? And it's excitement. That's what I'm hoping for the future.
Joanne, I just want to say, just stop for a second, because what you're describing there, though, is a great teacher who knows how to use that technology in a way. So again, it's, you know, what we said, we're just really cautious and concerned about, you know, a boxed curriculum, a computer in your hand. Yeah, you know, set it and forget it, the way you said that, because what you're talking about requires an incredibly awesome educator. Joanne, I'll give you a little more there.
So much. Great class.
Well, thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate you calling, Joanne. And call back anytime, because we want educators chiming in and sharing that, especially on these perspectives from the front lines. Thank you, Joanne.
I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. So that's it, though, Johnny. I mean, we talk about this, right? We're kind of like, whoa, you know, how do we make what's best for kids? Right? How do we do it? Well, it's excellent teachers. Are we going to use this moment? You know, kind of come back here. We're just about to the end of the show, though. You started off the show with Lieutenant Commander Data and his trapped with numbers. But if anybody else really remembers the show, Data had a profound, you know, dilemma. While being a synthetic data-driven organism, his interest in wanting to be human just consumed him, because there was a desire to know that there was more to life than just digits and numbers and data. And that's what we're talking about here. And so when you get really good education leaders, we'll understand that digits, data, all of these things, if it's what's best for kids, if it's what's best for communities, then we're all in. We're always just concerned, though, about making sure that if this isn't what's best for kids, if this is, quote, best for curriculum company X, or this is best for Congressman B or Congresswoman C, then whoa, we're going to back off on this. And so, you know, coming out of a global pandemic, getting back to school, the opportunity to step into this moment to do what's best, man, we got to love, we got to love, we got to love. It's Busted Pencils every Tuesday night. Join us live, Fully Leaded. Education talk, educated educators talking education. Joanna, thanks. Joanne, not Joanna. Joanna, thanks for that call from Madison. Everybody else, talk to you next week.
You got it. Good night.
You know, it's always nice to see you guys.
It's good to see you too, man.
Thank you, Evan.
Absolutely. Let's do it again sometime.
Good show, man. Good show. That was a good one, Tim.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils, or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
I'm staying in school.
We are Busted Pencils!